Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Is your inbox like mine? If it is, it's stuffed with appeals for donations. There are so many needs out there. The world we live in is badly in need of improvement, that's for sure. Some things can be done best by government, others by private sector, and still others by nonprofit and charitable organizations. Charitable organizations give us the opportunity to participate in making the world a little bit better by feeding the hungry, clothing the naked, providing education, and protecting the vulnerable. When disaster strikes, many people are moved to help by donating money. Seasons also affect the way we give. One analysis found that nearly 30% of charitable giving in the United States takes place during December, coming up very soon. Generosity benefits the giver along with the recipient. Giving to good causes is a way to make one's own life larger and more meaningful. So giving wisely is a win-win activity. Today's guest will help us become more enlightened donors. Welcome to the Van Leer Series on Ideas. I'm Renee Garfinkel, and it's my pleasure and honor to welcome Arnie Draymond to the show to talk about how to navigate the world of nonprofit and charitable organizations and how to give our charitable dollars where they will do the most good. Arnie heads the Draymond Consulting Group, which advises individual donors, family foundations, philanthropists, and charity funds. His insights are based on many years of experience. Arnie Draymond, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Renee. Pleasure being here.
Arnie, tell us how you got into your career of charity consulting.
Very interestingly, I had been living in Israel already, and I was overseas on behalf of the Jewish Agency as a shaliach, as a emissary in the community in the United States. When I was returning after 3 years abroad, a friend of mine who had a tzedakah fund, a little charitable piece that he would collect money for other things and then give it out, asked me if I would represent him and help him give his money away here in Israel. Danny Siegel is his name, very famous person within the tzedakah and charitable world. And I started with that very, very, very part-time. I actually come back and started working in high-tech full-time in the 1990s. And over the years, I work a lot less in high-tech and now significantly much more in the nonprofit world.
And how has the landscape of philanthropy changed since you began working in the field?
Well, it's very interesting. Danny, he's a very creative poet kind of thinker, and he was way ahead of his time. Very few philanthropists had somebody on the ground checking out where their donations were going, how it was being used, making connections with the nonprofits, feeling to be part of their family, the nonprofit family here on the ground. And so I've seen that model has really taken off. Certainly in the last 10 to 15 years, almost every family foundation and certainly the larger public foundations, federations, and other philanthropists of any size have some sort of representation helping them understand what's going on. So that was one major impact that Danny has led and now we see happening all over. And the second, I think, is that many of the donors are more interested in transparency and due diligence and not just hearing that the place that they're wanting to donate to is doing good work. That they want more than just the phrase doing good work. They want to really know what's going on behind it.
Well, Israel suffered a terrible, barbaric attack on October 7th. Including the kidnapping of some 240 people, more than 30 of them children and infants. People want to help. They want to fight against the terrorists. They want to help the survivors heal and rebuild. And they also want to help the 200,000 internally displaced Israelis who have been evacuated from their homes in both the southern and the northern parts of the country. What advice can you give them about how and where to donate?
We can get into specifics later if you wish. In general, and that's probably more important because it's just a guide to giving, a guide to giving wisely,
yes.
Is don't be fooled by the, as you mentioned earlier, all your inbox, your email inbox is flooded with requests. Your postal mailbox is probably still flooded with requests from old school days. Don't be fooled by all of those requests. Not everybody is doing what they say they're doing. Not everybody who needs money, who says they need money, actually needs money. Not everybody is a trustworthy partner in completing the mission. Sadly, when you donate, you feel good, but you don't know if you're really helping or not. And that's really the piece of the puzzle that's missing to understand giving wisely. So in general, I would avoid, well, again, very, you know, just generalities here, right? In general, I would avoid any of the large organizations, the more famous ones. They tend to be sitting on tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of shekels and not spending it. They're unable to spend that much money. They have very high net cash reserves. They tend to have very high salaries. They tend to be much more of a conglomerate business model and not a grassroots nonprofit. And that's where I would focus my attentions on the small ones, the ones where 100 shekels or 1,000 shekels or 10,000 shekels can make a huge difference to a nonprofit, as opposed to the other ones where they will never notice your contribution, whether you gave it or not.
So tell us a little bit about what you look for in order to recommend a charitable organization in general, anywhere.
Yeah, right. So again, in general, and it's true in every country, it's nothing to do particularly with Israel. First, I want to know, as I mentioned, what their net cash reserves are. By the way, all of the information is public. If you're a nonprofit, you have to file every year with the local authorities. In Israel, it's the Registrar for Nonprofits. In the United States, with the IRS. In Canada, it's with Revenue Canada, etc. And your paperwork is all public. And so the financial report, and it's not hard to read a financial report. I'm not asking anyone to get into the nitty-gritty details of every line item, but there's two or three items that you should look at and should stand out. So one of them is the net cash reserve. So if you take an organization and you see that they're holding on to 100 million shekel or $100 million, you need to ask yourself why. And is that really where I want my contribution to be going? If I give them a contribution of $1,000 today, is it going to be used, or is it going to go sit in the bank somewhere for a few years or more? It's just an unknown when they're holding significant amounts of cash. Another thing I look at are the salaries. I am not in favor of nonprofit professionals being paid low salaries, but neither am I in favor of them being paid high salaries. I think they should be paid decent living wages, more than teachers and social workers, sadly. It always seems to be these are the people at the low end of the scale. But they don't have to be earning salaries that you would earn in high tech. It shouldn't have to be that way. And so I'm careful about how much money is being spent on administrative and fundraising costs. I want to know that as much of my dollar or shekel that I donate is going to the program and not just to overhead costs. Those are the three main things. Yeah.
And all that information is also public? Salary?
The top five salary earners are listed, yes. And honestly, if you are interested in an organization, you can call them and ask for their financial report, even though it's online. You can ask, but you can also say, can I have a complete list of your salaries? If they're not willing to be transparent, what are they hiding? It's a public institution running on public money. It's not a private company where they can do whatever they want privately. It's a public sector company. And the government is funding them either directly, a lot of institutions do get government funding, or indirectly by giving me a tax credit when I make a contribution to them. So it has to be public information.
Give us a sense of the demographics of the giving world. What countries are the most generous?
It's a great question. I would, believe it or not, Israel is one of the highest percentage-wise givers. The thing is, though, not everybody gives cash or money, right? A lot of people in Israel give up their time, volunteer time, and a lot of people give items. It is very common for used furniture and used clothing to be donated out. And by very common, I mean almost seven times as common as it is in the United States and in European countries. So that there's a whole giving culture in Israel that puts it way ahead of almost every other Western country. And then other countries, a lot of the European countries run on a socialist style system, so that a lot of things are more equitable all the way through society. So you don't necessarily see giving as much as the way you see of it in the United States or in Canada or in Israel.
Are there differences between men and women in the way they give or the amount or to whom they donate?
Yes. The differences also break down, though, according to many factors. So it's very hard to say in general, because let's take people aged, 50 and older. So in traditional older families, in traditional older couples where the male of the household was the breadwinner, frequently the gifts are either in his name or in the name as a couple, whereas it's not in her name because, again, you know, traditional family values and old school styling, she didn't have control over any money. She had no income and she was just working, you know, She was creating a house, right? She was creating a household, raising the children, educating them, taking care of everything, so that her husband could go to work, you know, on Wall Street or wherever he was working, right? The sacrifices were made on both sides. But in any case, only in more recent years do we see in that older age group that there are things like the women's division of the federation or of almost any overseas nonprofit that they want to get the women involved. And so the women become not necessarily bigger givers, but more active givers.
And I'm guessing that women probably also volunteer more than men do, so giving of their time, especially in that demographic.
Correct. That's for sure. And then the younger ones, you know, college age and people in their 20s, it probably split about even in terms of the volunteering of their time.
Right. Are there any other characteristics of charitable people? Personality types or ethnic demographics?
From whatever studies I've looked at, it is interesting that Jews tend to be more charitable than others. However, devout Christians who are faithful and want to give their tithing, their 10%, are very careful to make sure that they are regular givers at that 10% level. Both of those indicate people who are involved in religion to a certain extent are more likely to be bigger donors and more active donors.
Well, it's good to hear about so much that's positive in humanity. Yeah. So now let's turn to the dark side. What are some of the scams you've seen in charities and nonprofits? Are they hard to spot?
I think they're hard to spot for the average person because, again, if a beggar comes to your door, you have no idea what's going on. I've seen beggars here in Jerusalem who, after a hard day's work, go around the corner and drive away in their Mercedes. So is that a scam? I don't know. We would have to define the word scam as well. But if, besides beggars, if you get a solicitation, big advice, never, ever give money over the phone. Never give money blindly in an email or postal mail solicitation. Never. You don't know who the person is. You know what's going on. Frequently, many nonprofits use a calling center to call you because they just go through lists of thousands of names hoping to get donations. The call center can take anywhere from 50 to 80% of all donations. So, you know, is that a scam? Well, 20% is going to the nonprofit. And the nonprofit says, what do I care? I'm still getting, you know, my 20%. I would have gotten zero if I didn't do it. So, but as a donor, I think you would be outraged to know that 80% of your money first went to the call center. Then of the 20% left, let's say another 20% of that went to overhead and fundraising costs, right? So very little of your money is actually being used the way you think it is. Particular scams include organizations that, again, claim to do something and they're not really doing it. I've seen, sadly, I don't know about many, but handfuls and handfuls over the years. Yeah.
Very often someone who's had experience with a problem, let's say a family member who had cancer, or they read about a terrible natural disaster, they'll be motivated to make a contribution. So why shouldn't they just reach out to, let's say, an organization with the word cancer or cancer research in its name, or in the second case, to the Red Cross or a similar organization with disaster response?
Because again, you just don't know where your money is going. As I said, you feel good donating. You feel like you've done your thing. Like, you know, you sit at home and you look and you go, what can I do? Yes, I can pray. Yes, I can send thoughts and prayers. But what can I do? You know, if it's not immediate in my neighborhood, if I can't go out and volunteer or give blankets to homeless people in the winter time, you know, what can I do in Sri Lanka? And what can I do for that poor girl with cancer, you know, sitting somewhere far away from you? So you make a donation and then you feel good. I've done what I could, but that's really not sufficient. As I said, it's sad because you think you've done good, but sometimes not good. People, you mentioned the Red Cross in the United States sits on thousands and thousands, tens of thousands, millions of dollars that they've collected from every hurricane and every natural disaster that they haven't spent yet. And look at their financial report and see money that was collected years ago and many, many years ago. It's still sitting there. So it's hard to, you know, just give in to your, you know, they pull at your heartstrings in order to donate, but you should be really careful how you donate. The same thing with an organization that has the name cancer or any other kind of disease in it. We want to help, but it's your responsibility to do the research to make sure that you are helping.
In preparing for this conversation, one scam that came to my attention was that organizations use a similar name to a well-known organization. So, for example, the Make-A-Wish Foundation, which I think many people have heard of, there'll be a knockoff, unrelated, called Kids Wish Network. Is that something you've seen?
It happens a lot, particularly because there are certain buzzwords, keywords. And again, the public isn't as aware. So they think it's either all the same. I mean, I just saw one yesterday. There's a particular organization in Israel that does some kind of rescue work for people in trouble. And this other organization used the same name, but added a third word to the title. And in the email they sent, they misspelled the word Israel. like if you're going to run a scam, at least, you know, have spell checker, right?
Finally, Arnie, we have an international listening audience.
Yeah.
Can you, or are you comfortable recommending some effective and transparent charities that you like in the U.S., Israel, and elsewhere?
Yes. So it's not always a particular one place because you would have to do all the research in that one place to understand it. But I'll give you an example. There's a 501c3 tax deductible foundation in the United States called Hands on Tzedakah. Hands on Tzedakah. And they are basically a foundation that donates to about 40 or 50 other nonprofits, right? A 501c3 foundation is just a nonprofit. It's the same. It's just most foundations don't actually do activities themselves. They donate to others, as opposed to a nonprofit, which is doing the activities themselves. So this foundation, they do all the research. How do I know? Because I work with them. I'm their Israeli representative, so I know them very well. They've started 21 years ago. I've been with them since day one. We do so much vetting and due diligence and understanding of not just the organization, but also of the people who run the organization. And not just that, but every time that there's a request, we go through questions after questions to make sure that that request is necessary for us to fund. And therefore, donors feel very comfortable donating through a foundation, an umbrella foundation like Hands on Tzedakah. In England, there's one called My Israel. My Israel does the exact same thing like Hands on Tzedakah. It's based on the same model. And those are the kinds of places I would look for where you can trust the foundation that knows how to give out money to nonprofits. But again, even within in the foundation world, there are very few that you can put your money on.
Well, you've been extremely helpful. Thanks so much for coming on the show today, Arnie. And
my pleasure.
Helping us become better, more
efficient. If anybody wants to look me up on Google, just look under Arnie Draiman, Draiman. I'm happy to help answer all questions to help people give money more wisely and effectively.
Thanks so much. And thanks to our researcher, Bela Pasikov. Bye-bye.
Bye.